The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast, where we pick our favourite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week, he's back. It's James Batchelor.
Hello, John.
Hello, Batch.
It's lovely to be back. As I don't know whether you spoke about it on last week's podcast because I haven't played it back. But I wasn't here because I was on stage.
Oh, God.
I was on stage. Yes.
Which West End theatre were you in?
Hambledon Village Hall.
Right.
Yes. But no, it was a roaring success. I mean, I remembered most of my lines. So it's lovely to be back. Really, really lovely to be back.
It's a real shame I missed that production. It's nice to have you. What have you been up to this week?
It's been very much just a week of just sitting at the desk, really, and getting through what has been quite a busy week for news. I haven't really been anywhere. I'm hopefully rectifying that next week. But this week it's been a busy one in terms of actually sitting down and working, which we need to do occasionally, of course.
Yes, yeah, so it's a rarity.
Yes. How have you been?
I've been fine. I haven't been driving any of James's cars around this week.
Oh. So
that's a bonus.
Yes.
But I will relay that from my tale from 2 weeks ago, or whenever the hell it was, about driving a Skoda Fabia around, the Skoda Fabia customer with her broken Skoda Fabia was so thrilled with our level of customer service, I say our, as I was an integral part of this, so thrilled that she sent a tip via bank transfer to James.
I heard this, yes.
Which is a new one on me. And I thought it was very sweet, but I definitely would not have tipped my car dealer for fixing my car when it was broken. But I mean, that just goes to show how happy James's customers are with his customer service.
Yes, and as we know, James is revolutionising the customer service experience, as we very well know. So
yes,
it doesn't surprise me at all, actually.
After a pay rise, Bat. Well,
you see,
I'm going to I'm going to introduce our guest.
Yes,
rather than us battling on about that for ages. So, helping us to analyse the news this week is staff writer Jack Williams. Jack, it's a pleasure to have you on again.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. I do feel like you're stalking me slightly. I wake up to messages from John Ray saying, come on the podcast.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jack. We planned this months in advance.
Of course. Yeah.
So, I mean, you've had a busy week, Jack, because you've actually been doing most of the stories rather than Batch, who just, you know, files in a column every now and again.
I know, hard at work. Much like Batch, I've not left the desk, really. The furthest I've ventured is Batch's house, which is about 7 miles away. So it's
an exotic week.
I dropped off an electric Astra. It's a very exciting week.
You did, yes. You disturbed my gardening because that was the only day that was nice enough to actually do a bit of pottering in the garden.
I can only apologise.
Yeah.
Christ. Okay. Right. I'm going to get on with the stories because there are more exciting things going than deadheading some tulips. So we are going to go through our stories, our favourite stories of the week. And at the end, Jack gets to decide who chose the best stories and who is the winner. I seem to keep winning, so I'm going to carry on that streak and go first. And I'm afraid I'm going to start with Kazoo.
Oh, what a surprise.
Shock.
Yeah. So we seem to be back to the era of one Kazoo story a week. So last week we talked about their entry into the used car marketplace marketplace, which is to say that they have launched their website now with no cars of their own. They're just purely advertising everyone else's cars.
Yes.
Which was a strange move, and I would say not an entirely successful one at the launch, if we're being a little bit critical. Since then, as Cazoo has to do every now and again, they've sent a statement to the New York Stock Exchange. So this was on the late hours of May the 1st. And it's not the most glowing statement, because they have to be, you know, whiter than white, totally honest with the stock exchange. And there's quite, well, I mean, it's quite a statement. So first of all, the headline really is that there's a possibility, quite a reasonable possibility, that it may soon fall into administration or liquidation. So they say they've been, despite the recent changes they've made to the business, which is getting rid of most of their staff, getting rid of all of their customer collection centers or dealerships, as we prefer to call them, getting rid of a lot of people at head office as well, completely pivoting the business. Despite doing all of these things, they're still struggling. So they are still looking for strategic alternatives or offers for the business as a whole, and have had nothing really of any concrete significance. So I shall quote them here. Well, they've admitted that without access to significant strategic alternatives or outside capital, it is reasonably likely that the company will need to file for administration or liquidation. We would then consider the best options for the company at that time. The options may include filing for administration or winding up the company. They've reduced their outlay from 25 to 30 million a quarter down to 6 to 7 million a quarter. So that's an enormous cut in terms of their outgoings, isn't it? And yet it's still not enough to keep them afloat, is what it sounds like. I mean, Batch, you've read this story, presumably. What do you think?
I have. Well, firstly, I'm quite impressed. It only took you 5 minutes to say the word pivot. I was wondering where you get the first mention of pivoting a business. But there we are. That aside, I have read the story. I have done my homework. And you get this overwhelming sense that it really is a sinking ship, isn't it? Because Paul Wolf. Now it sounds weird, doesn't it? It sounds weird saying Wolf. I do apologise, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry. Paul Wolf. CFO. He's already left the business. And of course, as we know, Alex Chesterman left quite a while ago. And the former CEO, Paul Whitehead, has also left the business recently as well. So it really is rats fleeing a sinking ship, isn't it? And I mean, for me, I just get this sense that you would have imagined that once they decided they were going to stop doing what the business set out to do, which of course was online used car sales, once they decided to stop that, they would just wrap up the business, as opposed to sort of pivoting towards being a used car marketplace. But I can only assume the only reason why they've continued in this vein is because of the investors. I would assume that there's been some sort of need to transition the business into something else, as opposed to completely pulling the plug. But it is clear that why on earth would anybody use, because, you know, and the irony is that they've spent, when did they start? 2020, wasn't it? It was lockdown year, wasn't it? COVID year, Cazoo started.
Late so 2019, spent, I can tell 2019. You.
December 19, they launched.
Sorry, 2019. So they've spent nearly five years with the mass advertising saying, you know, how easy it is to buy a used car online. And then by changing the nature of the business, it's never really going to work, is it? Because people have got it in their head that they go to Cazoo to buy a car as opposed to see a listing for a car. So as soon as they said they were going to pivot towards being a marketplace, we knew that that was pretty much going to be the final nail in the coffin. And reading this story, you just can't help but think it was inevitable, really. Of course, it's not completely over with, but the signs don't look good, do they? Jack, you wrote this story. I mean, you've probably got a lot more insight into this than we have. But
yeah, I need to be careful what I say. Yesterday, someone on Twitter accused me of having a vendetta against Cazoo, which of course I don't. They're a wonderful company, I'm sure. Yeah, but the thing that stood out with
sorry,
this one, really.
Can I just interrupt? It would be very hard to have a vendetta against a company you've transacted with. I mean, you bought a car through Cazoo.
Which is what I said. I mean, it's very hard to have this great campaign against them when I bought a car from them.
Just on that, I mean, it was actually a comment, not that we take all Twitter comments to heart, obviously, wherever it was. But it's quite, we don't have a vendetta against Cazoo. We report what is happening with Cazoo. And if nice things were happening at Cazoo, we would be reporting on them. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. And I mean,
we haven't made Cazoo lose millions of pounds, have we?
No.
I mean, I'd love it if we had that level of control over the market, but I don't think we do. And I mean, you know, if we go back to, I was going to talk about our video that we filmed back in, I want to say 2021, James and I and our videographer Nigel stood in front of Cazoo dealerships in Northampton and wherever else we went. And talked about how it was growing and how, you know, this was the future of car sales. You know, I don't think we've been overly negative necessarily about them. The other thing I will say is the way that reporting works on these things is we go to write a story about Cazoo. We would contact Cazoo and say, have you got any comments for us? You know, what can you do? We are giving you the right of reply. PR massage us if, you know, you feel the need to do that. And they've not really taken us up on that opportunity. We've asked them for 4 years for interviews with people. Nobody's been forthcoming.
No.
You know, we've not had a great level of interaction with them as a company. So unfortunately, if there's bad news, it's going to get reported in this way because they're not interested in talking to us about it. Sorry, Jack. Carry on.
I was just going to say, the other thing that stands out is that they've admitted that their financial results for 2023 are late.
Yes.
And when that starts happening, it's never a good sign, is it? They've put it down to management being too busy, basically, with the pivot again, and there's a major time strain on the management. So they don't know. They couldn't quite get round to filing the results. So they're expecting to be punished by the stock exchange for that as well. They've admitted.
And it's quite a serious thing to be delayed in dipping as well. So the new
You'd think getting your accounts that would be quite high on the priority list, wouldn't you? But apparently not.
Yeah, it's not looking great. I mean, I've had a look at their website again today, and there's actually a couple more dealerships seem to have signed up to advertise on there. But it just still doesn't feel like, and I said this before it launched, it doesn't still feel like a serious play, does it? It just feels like they are not twiddling their thumbs, but they are treading water until somebody comes in and buys them, because it must have some intrinsic value, the brand name of Cazoo and the, I don't know about the assets in the company, but the brand name certainly has some intrinsic value because they've spent so much money pushing it out across advertising everywhere. And then it's interesting in this as well, they say, you know, there's a hint that they are happy to carve up bits of the company, aren't they? I mean, it's a strange... it's a weird collection of assets they seem to have at the minute, because if they've got rid of we don't really know how this has worked internally. Do they still own some of those premises? A lot of them they sold off. You know, Arnold Clark, for example, bought the premises in Northampton before, as in their customer collection center, before they actually shut it down, long before. So
they leased the vast majority, don't they? So you just cancel the lease.
But there
you?
Are some, I think, that they own. I don't know how many they own. They own, I would assume they own, or they at least they have prep facilities in places like Portsbury and Bristol, but down by the docks. I assume they still have that. They've still got they still operate a business called Cazoo Wholesale, which is effectively a remarketing company. So they've got sites for that, one in Staffordshire, one in Bedford. That's all still ongoing. That doesn't fit with what their current business model is. It fitted when they were, you know, buying cars to sell on to people. Now, what use do those things have particularly? I don't think they're particularly well publicized either. As a, you know, that's not, that doesn't seem to be a serious, they're not saying we're going to rival BCA with these things or anything. It's just a, it's just something they happen to still have on their books. So it seems like they're keen to, or happy to, carve up this business and get rid of those things as well. It's all a bit of a mess, really, isn't it?
It is, really. And I think there has been a lot of criticism thrown at Alex Chesterman. I know there was a lot of criticism from car dealers and those in the motor trade when the company first launched in 2019. As we know, we're not going to repeat them, but the statements that Alex Chesterman made about traditional car dealers and the world of retailing cars. I think you'd have a grain of sympathy if he was still there at the helm. And almost like the captain still on board as the Titanic goes down. It's sort of, whereas the fact that he sort of cashed in and has left early on, again, it doesn't look good, does it? So no. It's just the whole thing has been a very, very sorry situation. And, you know, we haven't had a vendetta against them. We've just been reporting what they've been doing. And unfortunately, what they've been doing is not doing a particularly good job, which, you know, that's quite blunt, but it is the truth, isn't it? So yes. Shall I move us on?
Go on.
Well, some more bad news, really. I'd like to talk about Aston Martin, actually. So Aston Martin's accounts for Q1 came in this week, and they made for some pretty grim reading, it has to be said. So their pre-tax loss almost doubled to 140 million in Q1. Wholesale cars dropped by 26% from just over 1,200 cars in the same period last year to 945 this year. Of course, executive chairman Lance Stroll has been trying to put a brave face on stuff. He's saying that 2024 is a year of immense product transformation at Aston Martin, with the introduction of four new models to the market before the end of the year. And our first quarter performance reflects this expected period of transition as we ceased production delivery of our outgoing core models ahead up of the ramp up in production of the new Vantage, upgraded DBX 707, and our flagship V12 sports car, which is, of course, the new Vanquish. So, yeah, of course, he's putting a positive spin on stuff, but there's no doubt about it. This is not a great set of results. And you do have to think that Adrian Hallmark, who has left Bentley and is taking up a position at Aston Martin, is going to have a very, very tough time to turn this company around. Of course, it's not exclusively, the pressure doesn't exclusively reside with him, but there will be a lot of eyes pointed his way to see whether he can do it or not. He's, as we know, a very, very experienced operator. And I'm sure if any man can do it, it's Adrian Hallmark. But of course, Aston Martin is a very different company from Bentley, isn't it? Yes, they've both got very prestigious histories, both fabled British marks, as we know. But Bentley has been a profitable company for quite a while. And of course, the whole makeup of Aston Martin is very different. And the whole financial structure of Aston Martin is very different from Bentley, which, of course, is part of the VW group. So a lot of pressure on him, a lot of pressure on these new models as well. And yeah, it'd be nice to report some really great news about Aston Martin, wouldn't it? But I don't think we're going to be doing that for some time. Also, we had another story that came out today, just before this podcast went live. Our esteemed colleague Jack Evans is currently in Spain driving the new Vantage, and he had a little chat with some of the executives there. And Aston Martin say that they are not going to introduce agency sales because they feel if they did that, their dealers would become nothing more than prep centres. So, there's obviously a lot of confidence going forwards. It sounds like the dealers are fairly confident as well, from what we're told. But there does seem to be some tough times ahead for Aston Martin, to put it lightly.
Yes, I had this on my list as well. I mean, you've covered basically everything I was going to say. I read somewhere that part of the difficulties was with the DBX as well. and perhaps sales had not been as strong as they were hoping for on that. Because, I mean, when that car was launched, that launched actually quite a while ago now, 2020 or something like that, that came out. So I think, understandably, when that arrived, they were perhaps thinking this is going to be our saviour, much in the same way that the Porsche Cayenne was back in 19, whenever it was, or the Bentley Bentayga is, I imagine, the biggest selling Bentley at the moment. It may well be the biggest selling Aston Martin, I'm not sure, but it doesn't seem to be leading to an enormous number of sales. I don't know if it's due to the number they can produce. I don't know if they, you know, they don't have the facilities to pump out loads and loads of these cars. I think it's vastly more expensive, isn't it, than something like a Cayenne anyway. It's not a broadly massively affordable car.
Well, they built a whole new factory for it. This is the thing, isn't it? They built a whole new factory for it. And the DBX very much reminds me of the situation Jaguar finds itself with the I-Pace. You know, it's not exactly the same, but, you know, when it launched, it was, oh, great, this is fantastic. But it's sort of stopped dead, hasn't it? Yes, there has been the 707 variant of the DBX, more power and everything. But, you know, a larger company such as Aston Martin would have followed it up perhaps with a smaller SUV, or even added more powertrains, you know, dare I say it, adding a plug-in hybrid variant, you know, to try and make that car appeal to more people, which other brands such as Lamborghini have done a fantastic job at. You know, they've been able to appeal to people who perhaps, you know, the idea of having a mad two-seater mid-engine supercar was a bit too much of a stretch for them. They were still able to buy into the Lamborghini brand. The same hasn't happened with Aston Martin, unfortunately. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think I read the sales of DBX are down 60%, which is extraordinary when you remember how popular sales of premium, you know, ultra premium exotic performance SUVs still are. So they're hoping that this upgraded 707 DBX is going to turn things around, but you sort of, it's very difficult to believe that, really, isn't it?
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Okay, shall I move us on?
Please.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Hedin Automotive, the Swedish conglomerate's the wrong word, but the Swedish dealership outfit, which has purchased a couple of things in the UK. I believe they purchased a selection of Mercedes-Benz retail, I want to say, sites. And of course, more recently, they've bought the Stephen James Group, which is a Greater London-based BMW group with a smattering of sites, let's say, within or around the M25. So news this week is that they are going to rename the Stephen James Group Hedin Automotive, which is the first time we've seen anything named Hedin Automotive over here properly on mastheads of dealerships, because the Mercedes dealerships have just continued to trade as Mercedes-Benz of so-and-so, wherever it is. So this is the first time we're seeing the name. And I just wondered if that was... Well, firstly, it's a brave thing to do, isn't it, to rename your dealerships? And I think there's always, whenever an acquisition happens like this, I'm sure there's debates in head office about, do we keep the existing name and continue to trade on the good name that's built up in the last however long they've been trading for, and, you know, the customers want to come back to that particular dealership, or do we unify it all under a new brand name or the brand name of whoever's bought it? But they seem to be going for Hedin Automotive, which is, to me, this suggests not a kind of like what's the word, not a cleanliness of brand or anything like that. I think it's possibly a statement of intent as to wanting to buy more dealerships in the UK, because I don't think, I mean, we're talking about 3 or 4 BMW dealerships here. It's not an enormous dealer group. So to do this and to, you know, not to mince words, but to throw away the brand name Stephen James is a big, big move if you are not planning on buying anything else in the UK. Yeah. I think they've got plans way beyond this selection of dealers and the Mercedes dealers, of course.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you know, Group One Automotive did it a couple of years ago, didn't they? But they did have a larger footprint in the UK. So it's not unusual for the you know, the holding, the mothership to rebrand and stamp their authority on the company. But I agree with you. It seems to be a huge upheaval to do that when you haven't got plans to expand even further. I mean, my feeling about this story is it's quite it is a signal of intent, but it's also there's a bit of ego going on here as well, if I may put it like that, because of course they've sold their share in Pendragon. They weren't successful in, well, they withdrew in the race from buying Pendragon. So I think this is their other plan, which is, okay, you know, our time with Pendragon has passed. You know, we weren't able to buy that, and you would, you know, the jury is out whether they would have rebranded all the Pendragon dealerships, Hedin Automotive, if they were successful in that bidding process. But it's sort of like, okay, fine. Well, we're not going to go with Pendragon. We're going to go our own way, and we're going to stamp our footprint in the UK by putting the Hedin Automotive name everywhere. So yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. But I think ultimately, Joel, I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is the first step in a wider master plan to expand Hedin's. I've got difficulty talking today. Hedin's footprint in the UK.
They're interesting. Why aren't they Hedin? Because obviously they didn't get Pendragon. You would have thought they were probably in for Inchcape. Didn't get that. Quite a big name, but really they don't have a huge presence, do they? See, you can see clearly they want to grow, but what is there really left for them to buy of the big dealer groups? I mean, you've got Virtue still sitting there, isn't it? But they're sort of running out of road a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think, judging by their past couple of acquisitions, they're doing it piecemeal. They're doing little and often. I mean, they might surprise us, you never know. But I think there are still more small family-run dealer groups they seem to be going for more prestige brands, don't they? There's still quite a lot in the UK of dealer groups with maybe 3 or 4 dealerships to their name. I think probably the culture is quite good in those dealerships, whether they're able to maintain that or not. When they bring it under the Hedin brand is a different matter, because it's, you know, to have so many different companies under one heading, you know, so many different dealer groups and merge them all as one, I think is a challenge to then keep that culture, whatever that culture is. But I think that's how they're going to do it if they're going to expand further. That would be my guess. I think they'll be looking to hoover up little dealer groups, much to the delight, I would imagine, of manufacturer head offices who want to deal with less and less people over the years, and just want to unify the number of partners they deal with. So we shall see. This is over.
Yes. Well, sticking with the financial theme, Stellantis came out this week and gave a little update on their financial performance. And it shows that life is tough, not just for the small players such as Aston Martin, but also for the big players such as Stellantis, because they've had a pretty difficult start to 2024 as well, with both revenues and shipments down. Net revenue fell by 12% year on year to £35.65 billion. Their shipments were down 10% to just over 1.3 million units. So tough. They've had a tough start. And of course, Stellantis, as we know, has got a vast number of brands, some of which are obviously here in the UK. In contrast to Aston Martin, I mean, Stellantis have been quite clear it's been tough, and they're not trying to put a positive spin on it. They're saying that they are having a bit of a difficult time of it. They are putting their hope on EVs. They say they've got a wide number of a swathe of new EVs coming, which they hope will drive a sales increase. But as we know, and we've spoken a lot about on the podcast, that is coming at a time which, as we all know, it's pretty hard to sell new EVs, isn't it? Not just in the UK, where, of course, we've got a mandated quota, but across Europe and places like in Italy. Italy is in a completely different situation to the UK. Sales of EVs there are piecemeal compared to sales of petrol and diesel cars. So it doesn't look particularly good. And of course, this comes off the back of Carlos Tavares' comments last week about being quite brutal. I mean, he's quite an outspoken CEO, as CEOs go, but saying, look, the UK is making life for Stellantis very difficult. And if things don't improve in the UK in terms of quotas of selling EVs, they might even pull out of the UK. Now, I think that's unlikely, but it does show you the current thinking in some of these big car makers, and they are worried. They are very worried about the future. So, a bit of grim reading, but also I think it's a story which is real, isn't it? I mean, it's the reality is that car makers, big car makers such as Stellantis, are struggling to sell enough of the right cars to enough of the right customers.
The worrying thing for me about this story is Stellantis. I mean, Stellantis are kind of blessed and burdened at the same time, aren't they? They are blessed in terms of I'll start with the burden first. They are burdened with a huge number of brands, which, as we always bang on about, I think a lot of them overlap with each other and aren't terribly clearly defined in terms of the different markets you are aiming for. Yes. And you could argue that's not necessarily a bad thing, because choice is great, and sometimes people just want to, it's not all about price point, is it? People want choice at the price point that they are buying at, and they like the choice between a Citroen and a Peugeot and a Fiat and a Vauxhall and all that. On the other hand, they're blessed with the number of brands, and the number of the platform sharing is a real benefit to them, isn't it?
Yes.
So the idea that, for example, you can have your Jeep Avenger and your Peugeot 2008 and your Citroën C3 Aircross and your Vauxhall Mokka and so on and so forth, all on this same unified platform, and a Lancia and a Fiat and so on and so forth. Alfa Romeo, that's the one I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
So many different cars on the same platform, and they're doing reasonably well at hiding the platform's origins and making them all feel like different cars. You would think they have got the benefits of the economies of scale behind them to be able to make all this work, but they seem to still struggle in terms of the cost of BEVs, electric vehicles, don't they?
Well, I think
where they frequently say we're going to introduce this model as purely electric, and then they're forced to do a U-turn purely because, I assume, it proves too expensive for people. They've done that on a couple of occasions now. I think the Citroën Berlingo, okay, not a huge seller, but they, when they facelifted that 3 years ago, whenever it was, they said, right, no, this is entirely electric now. And then they've had a little rethink about that one. The Jeep Avenger, I think, was initially going to be just electric, and then it's arrived with a petrol equivalent because they've realized the demand is still there, and so on. It's an enormous ship to be at the helm of, isn't it? And I don't envy him in that regard.
Yes, but I think the big problem here is, you're absolutely right. The platform sharing should work, and in some respects it does. And it's fantastic that you can develop one platform and spread those R&D costs over 5, 6, even 10 brands. That's brilliant. And as we know, the Volkswagen Group has done, has been doing this for decades, and has you know, had a lot of profit from it. The problem is, this is all coming at a time where it's expensive to develop new platforms for pure electric cars or hybrid cars. When I say hybrid, I mean, you know, it's got to be suitable for a nice engine, or it's got to be suitable for a pure electric powertrain. This is coming at a time where, as we know, sales of electric cars, is the market is reacting, and their customers are pushing back on it. So, I mean, if this were 15, 20, even 10 years ago, I think Stellantis' fortunes would be very different. But of course, it's like I say, it's coming at a time where they're having to, you know, invest millions and billions of pounds in developing these powertrains, knowing that the ultimate customer is not quite there yet. So it is a very, very difficult position for them.
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act for them, isn't it? I mean, they're not going to pull out of the UK. You wouldn't have thought. But I think one of the other threats that they made was basically pulling out the petrol models so they meet the ZEV mandate stuff. And that's quite a tough thing for them to do, isn't it? Because they have to sort of balance out the fines that they'll get for selling more petrol cars with the money they'll lose by withdrawing the petrol models. So tough times ahead for them.
Funny you mention that, Jack, because that leads into, if I may, my next story.
Seamless.
Which is the latest forecast from Cox Automotive in its new Insight quarterly publication. So the headline here is that the new car market is forecast to topple over 2 million in 2024, but the ZEV mandate could hamper supply. And I think they are suggesting, and a few other people we've spoken to are suggesting, it will hamper it in exactly that way. So there's the possibility that, depending on the manufacturer, rather than pumping out overinflated numbers of EVs in order to hit the 22% target, they will simply reduce the number of petrol and diesel models that they sell. So that seems to be the view of Cox Automotive. Another somebody else we spoke to, I'm going to say off the record, said effectively the same thing to us, and that they are monitoring the manufacturers where they think that is likely to be the case. Some more than others. They're working it out based on various clever metrics and so on. But the other interesting thing in this Cox Automotive piece to me is that they've said there's never been, and I'm quoting Phil Nossard here, there's never been a more challenging time for dealers as right now. I mean, what do you think, Batch? You wrote this. Do you think Phil's on the money there?
I think he's on the money in terms of it's never been a more challenging time. I mean, I know that's a bit of a cliche to say, but I think dealers do have a very tricky job at the moment, particularly when it comes to new cars. I think the market could easily do 2 million. I mean, and Cox are also saying it could even reach as high as 2.2 million. I think it could easily do that. Manufacturers are very desperate to, you know, supply is well and back, is well and truly back to previous levels, earlier levels. And I think we will see lots of cars coming into the market. This is going to lead to lots more discounting. We've seen a lot of discounting in the first quarter of this year, and I think that's only going to continue for the rest of the year. The comment about some manufacturers might throttle back on selling petrols and diesels in order to, by natural process, bump up that 22% share of pure EVs or whatever share the car makers are aiming for is an interesting one. I mean, I did separately, and it was an off the record conversation with somebody this week. I did say, look, further down the line, could this mean that the UK just becomes too unprofitable to sell cars for some of the smaller brands? Will they decide, look, will they just stop selling cars in the UK because of this high quota of pure EVs? And the person I was talking to said, well, no, they can't really see that happening because the UK as much as we do think it's very difficult for car makers to sell cars here at the present moment, at moment in time, particularly with EVs, we still are the second largest market in Europe. So that's not likely to happen. But this prediction of 2 million this year, I think it could easily do that. I mean, you know, I talk to manufacturers on a weekly basis, and they've got no problems in terms of supply. It's just down to which cars do they take? Do they really focus on EVs to the detriment of ICE sales, or do they try and do a nice balancing act, which is easier said than done?
So the age of lack of supply is over, really, isn't it?
I think it pretty much is. Yes,
it's purely down to quotas and.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this is probably about 3 years ago. We had Robert Forrester on Car Dealer Live, and I said to him, you know, we were talking about, you know, back then there were huge supply difficulties and manufacturers were effectively just working to an order basis. So, you know, if you wanted a VW Golf Match 1.5 in yellow, for example, you know, you'd have to order that car. You know, yes, there might be a small supply of them, but effectively they're working on an order by order basis. And I remember saying to him, could you see this as the future, you know, the long term future? We stop having car makers churning out cars and having nowhere to sell them, or the only way of selling them is discounting massively to fleets or what have you. And he sort of said, yes, you know, perhaps this will be the future. You know, cars are sold on an order by order basis, but that doesn't seem to be happening. You know, as we all know, it's far cheaper for a car maker to keep cars rolling down a production line and then discounting them to the customer, as opposed to stopping that production line. Because there isn't a customer out there. So we are sort of getting back to how things were. But of course, the big difference this time round is this need to sell and build more EVs. So it really is an interesting time, isn't it?
I will just talk a bit more about the idea of manufacturers. So, I mean, you talked about manufacturers leaving the UK there, didn't you? Mm. I think... What Phil, I mean, that is, I think personally, that is a possibility. I think there are, I'm not talking like Ford. I don't think Ford, Mercedes, all these big companies are suddenly going to go, nah, not worth it. I don't think that's the situation. But there are still a handful of little importers, shall we say, who I think might choose to flee if, well, flee is the wrong word, but choose to stop selling cars if they simply can't afford to anymore. I mean, let's take Subaru, for example. And Subaru, if you're listening, do email in if you're not planning on leaving. But they've got one electric car to hit that 22% target. I don't think it's a particularly popular car. I would suspect as well, and I could be wrong, I'm just guessing, that because it's a re-engineered, not rebadged Toyota, very different car, there's probably a limit on the number of them they can sell versus the number that Toyota sells as well. And Toyota, I imagine, will be putting quite a heavy emphasis on that car, their sole EV, to try and get their number up as well. I just think if you're a company like Subaru, for example, you are going to struggle at the minute to hit this. And with the number of sales that they do, I just think they, as an importer, I might go, what is the point in this anymore? We've also got GWM Aura. We've still got, you know, lots of other brands that we could integrate into the UK. Why are we hanging on with this one? And I think there's probably a handful of other brands like that. I think a lot of them now are a lot of small, lower volume brands are a bit more insulated, because if I would say Alfa Romeo, for example, they've got the power of Stellantis behind them. I don't think they will struggle. But I think there is a possibility of some disappearing. Mm. As for ones looking at the UK, that doesn't seem to be quite such a problem, doesn't it? Does it? I mean, if you talk about brands wanting to enter the UK at the minute, we're talking about Chinese brands, aren't we? There's not American brands and Japanese brands and French brands and whatever existing outside the UK that are thinking, oh, we fancy a piece of that. And if they're a new Chinese brand, predominantly they are focusing on electric cars. And if you're focusing on electric cars, why wouldn't you enter the UK, particularly if you're from China, because you've got the margin to make a success of it in those cars because the manufacturing's cheaper.
you're probably supported in some way back home by some sort of state grant, shall we say. And you don't have this issue of worrying about the 22%, because if your entire lineup is EVs, then great, crack on.
Yeah. To take your Subaru example, it would make sense, wouldn't it, if there was some sort of government, give allowances for these lower volume brands. I think the EU have done something similar. But that would require a level of competence from the government, which they haven't really shown thus far with EVs. So who knows?
Well, yes. And I think there is an allowance, but I think it's a very low number of cars. Mm. Is it the sort of, I feel like Batch will know more about this. I think Case maybe would be exempt.
Yeah, it's
like Morgan and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the specialist, dare I say, refer to brands like that, but it's more the specialist car builders who are producing, selling just a couple of hundred cars a year, if that, which you could say the same as Subaru, really, couldn't you? But
it's not through them trying, I think.
Yes.
So. Batch, move us on.
Right, I've got my final story because you nicked a couple of mine, I'm afraid. But my final story, I'm going to talk about used cars because we've spoken about new quite a bit. Motors came out this week and said the average used car prices went up 1% in April. Of course, this is not groundbreaking news if you are readers of Cars Dealer magazine, because, of course, we're also talking to CapHPI, but of course they're trade values. This is more retail. But it does seem as though the days of enormous price drops, well, not enormous, but price drops in the used car market might be coming to an end. I do countenance this, a little bit. Perhaps we are jumping to conclusions a little bit, but Motors are firmly of the opinion that those price drops are leveling out. Stock levels are rising across franchise, independent and car supermarkets as well. And Motors, they've described this as a bit of a correction. We've heard that word used before, but it's a bit of a correction in terms of used car prices. If you want to know what the average used car price was in April, well, I can tell you that. It's just under £17,000, £16,964 to be precise. It sort of mirrors what I was talking to Autotrader about this week as well. We had an interview with Catherine Fayers, which will be coming out very shortly. She was saying very much the same thing, that prices very much have sort of leveled out. Interestingly, she thinks, well, Autotrader thinks, that there's going to be a supply shortage of used cars later this year. And as we know, a lot of all of this depends on what happens towards the latter part of this year, particularly with the new car market, because, of course, as we know, what happens in the new market does impact the used market. So, there are economic questions, aren't there? General election questions, all sorts of things which may be happening in the second part of this year, which will no doubt have an effect across the board.
There are some stats in this which caught my eye about EVs, I'm afraid. So I thought this was very interesting. The proportion of fully electric models listed by dealers on Motors rose in April, 5% month on month and 14% year on year.
Mm.
So this is just defleeted EVs suddenly appearing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is they made EVs in total made up 5% of all dealer stock on Motors, but just 1% of the ad views, which is in direct contrast, bizarrely, with something that was in Autotrader stats, which I'm going to pull off the top of my head, which was that they were much, much greater searched for based on the number of, the percentage of searches that were EV is greater than the percentage of EVs on the whole platform. Mm. So it just seems to be this mixed thing around EVs at the minute, isn't it? I mean, we get the same thing with when we talk about the valuations of them. It's all very model dependent, but it just seems to be so hard to predict what the market is doing with EVs at the minute. And again, we speak to EV dealers and they're having a great time.
They say people want EVs, values are low, which is great. And then you speak to other people who try and stock one or two, and it's just been a disaster.
Difficult times. It is.
Shall I squeeze in one more?
Squeeze in, yes.
I've got a whimsical one to put in at the end. And it's news of a Nissan Leaf that has had quite a journey, because it's ended up, it was purchased from a, I'm selling this story all wrong, but it was purchased from a Southwest Nissan in Exeter, and it's ended up being used 4,000 miles away in the middle of the South Atlantic. So what's happened here is the Met Office wanted a car for their Met Office, whatever it is, in Ascension Island, which is a teeny tiny volcanic island, which I admit I'd never heard of, right in the middle of the South Atlantic, between Brazil on one side, Africa on the other side, no land for miles and miles around. It's a British overseas territory. Weirdly, though, you can't go and visit unless you get a, you have to apply to like the King's Administrator or something to get a permit to go there. It's a very strange, you won't see it on TUI. But this Nissan dealer has sold this Leaf and it's ended up 4,000 miles away. And I just thought, is that the furthest customer that anyone has ever, I mean, certainly the furthest away a Nissan Leaf has ever ended up from its purchase dealership. But I wonder if anyone wants to write in and tell us about a deal that they've done that has ended up a long, 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 long way from home. And I don't mean on things like Ferrari 250 GTOs and so on, get purchased and then sent to America or whatever. But something incredibly, I don't want to say dull, but something incredibly benign like a Nissan Leaf being sold that far away. I thought that was quite amusing.
Yeah, so if you've sold a Dacia Duster diesel to the Philippines, do get in touch. Yes. Write in, call in. No, seriously, do call in.
Please call in.
Yes.
So that's the end of our stories. Jack, are there any stories you think we've missed this week?
I'll just squeeze in one that I enjoyed writing this week. It's one of these dodgy dealer court stories that we write quite a lot.
Talking about this, Jack.
Yes. Tread carefully. So there's a guy, Samuel Smith, in Nottinghamshire. He was done for, you know, basically selling dodgy cars and making a huge amount of money and buying himself Ferraris and nice holidays and all that off the back of it. The thing I enjoyed about it was the judge's absolute no holds barred scathing remarks to him at the end. Just went in two-footed on him, told him he was arrogant, brazen. This shows a staggering arrogance. You've come to court without a flicker of remorse. You've lived this life that was persistently and outrageously unfair, and a prison sentence is only appropriate. And I just thought it was quite funny because I've been to a lot of these court cases, and it's always amusing when judges get quite angry.
Right.
I enjoyed that one.
So what had he done? He'd sold written off cars not being written off.
Yeah, so he was basically selling cars that had been written off, doing minimum repairs, selling them for hugely over-egged fees, refusing to repair them, and then using that money to fund himself a lavish lifestyle, is what the court heard.
Despite funding his lavish lifestyle, he still had 1,114,000 or something sat in the Lloyd's bank account.
He did, yes. He's done it well. Fair play to him until he's been caught.
Apart from leaving that in his current account, obviously.
Yeah, other than that, yeah.
So of the stories that we have picked, which was your favourite?
I think the biggest story of the week's got to be the kazoo one, isn't it? I think John's nicked it again.
It's only because you wrote it, John.
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean,
no, but
looking through the list. Going through the list, I think I wrote most of them. So it's,
you know. Yeah, you did.
Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. No, it was the biggest story. You're right. Yeah.
Well, that's Jack again with his vendetta against kazoo.
I hate them and I want them to fail.
For any lawyers listening, Jack is joking. That was... Of course. Comedic hyperbole, and those are not the views of Car Dealer Magazine, nor James Baggett's. Lovely. Well, on that note, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Jack and Batch, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode with probably more kazoo news. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, head over to cardealermagazine.co.uk or have a look in the show notes, where we've helpfully listed them all for you, probably not in the right order.
Also, don't forget to rate us, or whatever the terminology is, and subscribe, or whatever the words are for podcasts. Thanks again. Goodbye.